Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Royal Watcher podcast. My name is Saad Salman. I'm the founder and editor of the Royal Watcher, a royal commentator, and a royal contributor for alt.com.
My name is Sam Gillespie. I am the editor of the Beaumont. I have a background in fine jewelry and a long-held fascination with history and royalty.
And welcome back to another episode on the Royal Watcher podcast. Today, we're talking about kind of some events that have been happening in the past few weeks. One of the major ones has been the Luxembourg New Year's reception, which kind of ties in with our last episode on the New Year's receptions in Denmark and Japan and in Spain. And we're also going to talk about the Dutch royal family's tour of the Caribbean.
Yes, been a very a nice break from all the British royal news for everyone.
Definitely. Yeah. So we're going to start with kind of talking about Luxembourg at the end of January. So they had their annual New Year's reception, which they're calling it annual, but this is only the second time it's happened. They started the event back in 2020 because usually they used to have a big white tie gala at the end of their National Day celebrations in June. And they thought it was maybe a bit too much events because there's a parade there, there's a church service, I think there's a reception as well. So it's too many events. And they decided to kind of replace that annual gala and have it at New Year's, in which they invite diplomats, the government, religious figures, and have a gala dinner at the Grand Ducal Palace.
Oh, that's interesting. I did wonder why they'd suddenly brought it in. I thought maybe it had something to do with COVID or, you know, just, but it's nice to see that, you know, they can modernize these traditional events when they want to, when they deem, you know, the previous traditions not as necessary anymore.
Definitely. And this way, we kind of have a nice gala at the start of the year. And in June, because there's already so much stuff happening at that time, it allows them to kind of focus on the other events for National Day much better.
Yeah, and it gives us something to talk about throughout the year.
So this year, Grand Duke Henri and the Grand Duchess were joined by all five of their children and one of their daughter-in-laws for this gala, and it was quite a mixed turnout in that sense.
Oh, how come?
It was basically, so the first reception, which happened in 2020, just had the Grand Duke, the hereditary Grand Duke and Grand Duchess and Prince Alexandra. So we kind of had no expectation of what's going to happen. And then this time we had the Grand Duchess and also Prince Felix, Prince Louis, Prince Sebastian, but no Princess Claire, who's Prince Felix's wife. And it was a kind of difference in dress codes where you see some of the men are in uniform and some are in white tie, which, I mean, they haven't served in the military, so that kind of makes sense. And then the ladies are all in gowns and a mixed bag of tiaras as well. With Luxembourg, you never really know. They sometimes have a hierarchy and sometimes just kind of pull whatever's there.
Yeah, okay, well, maybe they're still working out the finer details and they're just sort of making up as they go along.
Definitely. I think there's no set rules like we were watchers like. So starting with the Grand Duchess, she wore this kind of lovely caped gown with the Belgian scroll tiara, which is one of the wedding gifts to her mother-in-law, Grand Duchess Josephine Charlotte. And it was almost auctioned after the Josephine Charlotte's death, but in recent years, it's become Maria Theresa's favorite tiara. She's worn, I think, almost every gala except one in the past decade.
Yeah, no, it's a very nice piece. I mean, like you say, the Luxembourg royal jewels are a bit of a mixed bag. They're either very small sort of necklaces that have been converted into tiaras or way too big for Grand Duchess Maria, such as the Luxembourg Empire tiara. So, yeah, I think it's nice that she's found some one that's sort of in the middle that really actually suits her head shape.
Definitely. And for it's, I think, one of my most like favorite modern tiaras because of the way kind of it looks. It has a modern look, but it also doesn't look as striking as kind of some of the contemporary tiaras we see popping up.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so it was a lifelong favorite of her mother-in-law, and it was loaned to her sister-in-law, Princess Sibylla, back in 2002. But since then, it's only been worn by the Grand Duchess, and we see kind of how she's really made it her own. With the tiara, she was wearing her Order of the Luxembourg Lion, I believe.
Is it the Golden Lion? I think it's
a Golden Lion. Yes.
Yeah.
And so that is the highest order, and Maria Theresa is the only member of the family married in who has it because she is the Grand Duchess. As we see in the next slide, the Hervey Grand Duchess only has the smaller order, which is the Order of Adolf of Nassau, who was kind of the founder of this branch of the Luxembourg Grand Ducal Dynasty.
Okay, and do you think just perhaps because it's quite, I mean, when was Luxembourg founded? It's a very new country, so, you know, maybe...
It was, yeah. So you think about it, so Luxembourg was technically founded in, it's pretty ancient country, but it used to be a part of the Netherlands, and it was kind of ruled by the Dutch royal family until the 1890s. And since then, it's been owned by and ruled by a different branch of the family because of male line primogeniture and all of that kind of complication. So they brought their own orders, but they're still closely related in a sense to the Dutch royals as well.
Yes, and the Belgians.
And the Belgians.
Yeah.
But that's through kind of marriage rather than dynastic.
Yes, that's very true.
So, yeah, and the Hervey Grand Duchess wore the aquamarine tiara, as you were saying. This one is actually a bracelet converted into tiara. And this was another one of those pieces acquired by Josephine Charlotte in the 1950s, which has these kind of really massive square aquamarines.
Yeah, very similar to Queen Elizabeth's aquamarines, I'm just noticing. Just, you know, the emerald cup, which is like a rectangular cup, with its shapes. So, yeah, yes. There are other cups to aquamarines, but hey-ho.
I believe these would have been Brazilian aquamarines as well. And yeah. I'm not really sure that we know the provenance of these pieces, but they were acquired in the 50s. Josephine Charlotte did have kind of relations in Brazil, especially in the royal family, but then they were also massively wealthy, so they could have acquired it through any means.
Yes.
And so with that, the Hervey Grand Duchess wore a Seraphine maternity gown, and of course, we've already talked about her order. And moving on to the third royal lady is Prince Alexandra, who kind of gave the biggest surprise tonight, which was wearing the Luxembourg Chaumet emerald tiara for the first time, along with the family's antique emerald earrings and their big emerald bangle.
Yes, and I must say, it's definitely grown on me, this tiara. It is, it's, I would say it was my favorite. I do like the Luxembourg Empire tiara, but it's enormous. But this one is, yeah, it's growing on me. So it's an Art Deco piece made by Chaumet, I believe, in the 1920s.
It was made, I believe it was Christmas 1924.
Okay, well, I was close then. Yeah. So, yeah,
it's so it was, yeah, beautiful piece.
Beautiful Art Deco piece made by Chaumet, who happened to make pretty much some of the best tiaras owned by royal families. And I believe this was initially made for Grand Duchess Charlotte.
And then during World War II, because she became such an iconic figure and her portraits were kind of spread all around the US and the UK, and this tiara supposedly inspired the tiara of Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I've heard that one. I mean, yeah, I can see it.
It's definitely a striking piece, and kind of for Alexandra, who's going to be getting married in April, it's one of the more major pieces from the Grand Ducal collection that she's worn.
Very much so. I mean, I probably wouldn't be a wedding tiara. What do you think? If she's worn it,
probably not.
If she's worn it before her wedding, I know that people usually like to surprise us on their wedding days. She's probably not going to wear it again, but you never know. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, I don't think it's been used as a wedding tiara yet, but it would be quite striking if it was.
Yeah. And
I kind of really want to see this one worn by the Hervey Grand Duchess at some point, because I think it would really kind of suit her general look and the way like she was. But in this picture, you can really see Alexandra looks quite like her grandmother, Josephine Charlotte.
Yes, very much around the jawline.
Yeah. And she's wearing, along with all the jewels, is an Oscar de la Renta cape gown. So this kind of ends up our roundup of the Luxembourg New Year's reception. What were your thoughts, Sam?
I think it's wonderful. I mean, you know, as I said in the beginning, the fact that they are, like, I thought they had started this tradition because of COVID and obviously social distancing and the amount of people that you can have, or you used to be able to have, in one room. But if it's a case of them wanting to sort of modernize an older tradition and, you know, make it, I don't know, what's the word, like more practical, more streamlined, so that you have more events throughout the year so that more people can attend. I think that's fantastic. And, you know, it's a good example of, you know, as much as something is tradition, it can be tweaked and changed.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a really good way to kind of distribute stuff and not be so kind of burdened on one day. And this way we kind of have a new occasion to look forward to with tiaras.
Yes, we all love a tiara occasion.
Definitely. And then moving on, so the Dutch royal family have been on a massive tour on the Caribbean. They're still on the tour, so it's continuing, and it's been quite fun to watch because it's the first time that the Princess of Orange, the Dutch Crown Princess, has joined her parents on the tour to the Caribbean territories of the Kingdom of the Netherlands.
Yes, and I think as we can see from these photos, if you do watch our YouTube channel, they are having a blast.
Yes, I think the Dutch royal family themselves are really popular in the Caribbean territories, and you can really see that they enjoy themselves, they have massive support, and really, you can see that they have a fun blast, especially with the traditional kind of ceremonies they have in those territories.
Very much. Very nice to see. I think if we've all seen the clip, Queen Maxima, she can move. That girl's got moves.
Yeah, I think we'll include that clip at some point in our videos as well.
So yeah.
For those watching on YouTube, you'll have a chance to see that.
Yeah.
So the royal family, they started the trip on the island of Bonaire, where they were welcomed by the lieutenant governor. And then they had a series of visits on the first day, in which they started by visiting slave huts, really addressing the legacy of colonialism head on. And then they had a series of kind of cultural visits. They went to a nature sanctuary, and it was really a broad visit in that sense, where they try to bring in all aspects of kind of the Dutch legacy in the Caribbean.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, unfortunately, given the bad PR from the British, the last British royal tour of the Caribbean, I think these, you know, these things have to be addressed. And like you say, they have to be addressed head on. So, you know, it's a nice example to see that the Dutch are doing that.
Yeah, and the Dutch have been really tackling this issue. I think a few weeks ago it was announced that the king has commissioned an independent kind of group of researchers to look into the legacy of slavery into the House of Orange and their fortune. And just a few weeks ago, the Dutch prime minister also apologized for slavery in kind of a very finite way than most other countries have done. So they really are, it's at the forefront of what their legacy is.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. That's a really good example that they're setting.
Definitely. And then, so this was the first day. And then in the evening, they had a big visit to this Taste of Bonaire market. And they saw kind of tasted local foods, saw music performances. And you can see, for those watching on YouTube, that in the back, the sun is setting and they're on this Caribbean island. So it seems like a really fun time.
Yeah, it's not your trip. I mean, I know that the you know, other royal families do have fun when they go on tour, but they do seem to be more, what's the word, accessible than perhaps
Definitely.
Other royal families, but they're still very regal, which is very nice.
Yeah. And like we were talking about here, so kind of a start with the fashion, that on the first day, the fashion, I think we can see the king's looks change. More than ladies, but Queen Maxima is kind of sticking true to her kind of queenly style, wearing a hat at everything. But the Princess of Orange started off in a dress, and then she's worn kind of a range of different outfits throughout the tour.
Yeah, and yeah, she's one of my favorite royals to watch, sort of up and coming, and I love her fashion sense. It's, you know, it's very relaxed, but like I say, very regal too.
Definitely, yeah. And then Maxima's fashion can sometimes be hit or miss, but when the royals arrived in Aruba the following day, it was, I think, a hit on all fronts, where
really
love the Prince of Orange's suit, but also Maxima's hat, dress, and the brooch.
And the brooch and the earrings and the ruby earrings. Oh, it all goes together. Love it.
So Maxima wore the brooch of the Dutch ruby peacock pearl. And then she had an outfit change a few hours later and wore kind of, I believe those are citrine jewels, which are kind of modern pieces in her collection.
Yeah, and a little bit more quote unquote casual
booby piece. But then you can see Maxima's wearing a really lovely dress and a hat as well. So casual for Maxima, but not
yeah,
for
yeah. She puts us all to shame.
Definitely. And you can see the king also had a bit of an outfit change.
Yeah.
Though his Caribbean wardrobe could require a bit more help, in my opinion.
It could, yeah, but I mean, come on, how hot is it? I mean, I know it's February, but like, what's the temperature?
Probably not too cool.
Mm.
So, no, he seems to be having fun. That evening, they attended this big festival. It was the following evening, sorry, called the Bon Bini Festival at Fort Zoutman, in which they had a full kind of exploration of Aruban culture history through music and dance.
Oh, lovely.
And you can see kind of a glimpse of Maxima and the king dancing, and this is where we'll include the video as well.
Yes, I'll put a little short clip on. And like I say, she can move.
She can move. And Maxima actually wore this dress for a kind of infamous video that was leaked a few years ago of her doing the flamenco, which kind of got a lot of criticism from certain segments of the press.
Why?
And so it's nice to see her kind of bring it back for another dancing event.
Oh, why can't she dance the flamenco? She's got Argentinian background.
I know. It was not from Dutch people. It was from other segments of Twitter.
There's always some, isn't there?
There always is. And then at the same time, you can look at the Princess of Orange, and her kind of wardrobe is very different from other, in which she's wearing this poncho style thing. And I've really got elements where I saw her resemblance to Princess Beatrice, and you can see kind of how she's channeling that kind of stability. And Beatrix herself is very popular in the Caribbean territories. So very interesting. So the Dutch moved on the next day. They traveled by a kind of navy ship to the island of Curacao. I hope I'm pronouncing.
I have no idea. If we did it wrong, please correct us in the comments.
Sorry, everyone. But they arrived and they had a kind of really lovely official welcome. And that was the first day. And then the next day was the King and Queen's 21st wedding anniversary.
Oh.
So you can see them on the left over here for everyone watching on YouTube. They tied a lock on to a monument as a symbol of their love. And it was really quite lovely. And that evening, there was a dinner held for 21 citizens of Aruba, Curacao, which kind of symbolized their 21st anniversary. And you can see kind of different looks again on the two ladies.
Well, how romantic.
So quite lovely. And then the next day, they kind of began with this visit to a plantation, where again they saw kind of how slavery played a part in kind of the legacy of the island. And then there was a visit to I believe a beach where they saw the preservation of turtles.
Yes, of course, I remember seeing that video of Caterina Amalia with the turtle. Yeah
So definitely kind of looking for at really different aspects of kind of legacy of decolonization, and then nature conservation, plus a series of official ceremonies and then cultural events, like that evening when there was a Temba music concert with carnival performances. And you can see, again, it's a whole different look. And I have to say, these are my, so far, I think, favorite looks of the tour. And they all look so kind of in their own element and very relaxed. And glad to see the king has a white / cream suit on.
Yes, it goes very nicely with the sunburn, I can see.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole kind of, I really like when they wear kind of gowns and stuff on these Caribbean tours, because it makes it seem a bit more formal than kind of just normal clothes. So this is right up my alley.
Yeah, lovely. No, it seems like it's, like I say, very relaxed and accessible, but at the same time, still sort of keeping it official.
Yeah, definitely. And so this is the tour so far. They've visited three nations. And then from Monday, we're recording on a Sunday for everyone watching, and they'll move on to St. Martin, St. Eustace, and Saba for the final leg of their tour, which ends on the 9th of February.
Wow, that's quite a long tour. I mean, you know, the British ones, you usually get about a week, don't you?
Definitely, yeah. I think this is one of those longest ones where, because it's an introductory tour for Amalia, they're taking their time trying to get
Yeah,
through.
making sure everyone sees her, making sure she understands the issues. And yeah, I mean, one thing you were telling me before we started recording was the fact that the Dutch monarchy itself is actually quite popular within these territories.
Definitely, yeah. I think we have a friend Brigitte on TikTok who's kind of talked about how even though she's not a big fan of the monarchy, that the Dutch royals are really popular, and there's so many benefits to the monarchy that the islands, not just monarchy, but having that link to the Netherlands, because these are not former colonies; these are technically active parts of the Kingdom of the Netherlands. Three of them are basically districts of the Netherlands. And three others are independent kind of countries within the Kingdom of the Netherlands. So there's different kind of legal relationships, but they all kind of benefit from being a part of the Netherlands. They have resources, kind of EU citizenship and that sort of stuff.
Fantastic. That's so interesting. And again, something I never knew that they were. So you could say, you know, would it be like in Denmark where she, well, she, Queen Margrethe is also queen of, is she still queen of Greenland?
Yes, and the Faroe
And the
Islands.
Faroe Islands. So could it, is it a case of King Willem being the king of the Netherlands, Aruba, St.
Yes,
Martin's?
I think that is
Oh.
the legal kind of terminology.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Wow, didn't know. And as you say, there's actually is actually support for still being you know, within this sort of union with the Netherlands.
Yes, but at the same time, there were kind of several small-scale protests to this visit and how kind of it's been treated in a sense. But an element of that was really kind of talking about the colonial legacy and addressing those issues rather than wanting to kind of really just get away from the Netherlands and just take them, make themselves kind of independent.
Independent. Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
So I think this is the conclusion of our episode this week. So what were your thoughts so far, Sam?
It's a good start to the year, and I must say, it's been a that was quite a nice palate cleanser from the fallout from Spare, which I'm kind of bored with now. Kind of bored with.
I'm with you on that. And for those wondering, we will have an episode on King Constantine's funeral up in a few weeks when there's going to be a memorial service. So we'll kind of round it all up in one episode.
Yes, very much. And I'm looking forward to that one. I've been preparing.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you everyone for listening.
Yep. Thank you. Bye.